What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of Unnecessary Roughness weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas. And I'm joined, as always, by director of broadcasting as well as team and recruiting reporter Grayson Grundhafer, as we have some recruiting and some other things to talk about on this week's edition. And Grayson, how are we doing this week?
Doing good. This has been a really hectic week. Signing days in 7 days. The signing period starts December 19th. So just kind of getting ready for that and trying to get as many notes as I can for all the Sikkim 365 premium subscribers. But yeah, it's been good. Been a good week and just kind of looking forward to this class kind of rounding out a little bit. And then, of course, the bowl game is coming up here in 2 weeks. So lots of stuff going on as far as Baylor football goes. And then, of course, Baylor basketball's got a road trip at Arizona coming up this weekend. So that should be very interesting as well.
Yeah, and the Lady Bears have a road trip to number 11 Stanford. So they've got a big challenge coming up. And they won this week on their Wednesday afternoon showdown against Morehead State. Showdown's way too strong of a word, by the way, but that was the one that came to mind. But yeah, they beat Morehead State, so now they'll face number 11 Stanford, and then they've got another gimme sandwiched in between before UConn on January the 3rd, I believe, is the date they play the Huskies, who are number one in the country. So yeah, a lot of basketball going on now. We'll talk some basketball, but we'll cover it in our mailbag because there are already some questions in the mailbag that have to do with basketball. So we'll kind of hit it all in one fell swoop when we answer your questions you posted on the premium board for this week. We'll get to that at the end of this episode. We're going to start off by talking a few notes surrounding the team. And, of course, this will be a very heavy recruiting edition, as that's all the rage right now, is recruiting, with National Signing Day number one, the main National Signing Day, right around the corner, just days away at this point. I think we'll all breathe a heavy sigh of relief when the ink is dry on a lot of these prospects. And I think what it also does, it gives you a much clearer view of what to expect in the final five-week rush or so, six-week rush post-National Signing Day number one to that first Wednesday in February. We'll have a lot more clarity on spots that still need to be filled or positions that aren't fully and adequately addressed enough. That will all be locked in stone next Wednesday. That'll be good to see that.
Yeah, it absolutely will, and I guess it all starts with what happened just a few days ago.
Yes.
With Niadre Zuzua.
Yes, Niadre Zuzua out of Monroe College up in the Northeast.
JUCO.
A couple of new commits for the Baylor Bears as they start to inch closer towards 20 total commits for this class, and we know it's going to reach 20. We know it's going to go past 20. We just don't know how far past 20 it'll go, if it'll go all the way to 25. But yes, the other night, a couple of announcements. Zuzua, though, was the second on the night, as there was a little double whammy. First, though, was Florida safety Cecil Powell. And what can you tell us about Cecil Powell? He's at a position of need, obviously. He's another Sunshine State guy. We know that Evan Cooper and Fran Brown and various other assistants who you might not expect to be going to Florida to recruit, like a Joey McGuire and those types of guys, have all been heavily pursuing a lot of Florida targets. But Cecil Powell is on the board now. He's going to be an early signee. What can you tell us about him and what this means for this class?
Yeah, so this is a big get, and the main reason is because you just mentioned it. He's a safety, and Baylor really needs depth in the safety department. You know, obviously they have Christian Morgan, JT Woods, and Chris Miller back next year, but Chris Miller only has one more year left, and then you're left with some young guys. So you need to continue to build depth there, and they're doing a pretty good job of that with this class right now. But Cecil Powell is a guy that you turn on his film, and he returns punts well. He returns kicks well. He intercepts passes, returns them for touchdowns. He makes plays tackling. He's just dynamic when he gets the ball. And so it's just one of those things, I think, that you get a playmaker in the secondary that's going to, you know, create turnovers and going to be able to make big plays. And I think that's where he fits in to this defense in a big way. And this was a huge get. And, you know, his offers aren't amazing. Indiana is his only other Power 5 offer, which is kind of confusing because you watch his film and there's no doubt this kid can flat out play. He's going to be a hidden gem, I think, in this class for Baylor. But yeah, he visited December 7th, through the ninth. He was on that official visit, had a great time, changed his profile picture to Baylor, committed, of course, on Monday. And I just think that this is good for momentum. And clearly it started a little bit of momentum with him, but yeah, it was great to see him come on board, and he gives the Bears another safety prospect, a more true safety prospect, as opposed to like a Tyrone Brown or Hakeem Vance, who could play linebacker or could play safety. I don't believe he's quite like that. I think he's pretty much a true safety, going to be locked in there. So we'll see how he develops, but 6'1", 193 out of Piper High School, and Cecil Powell was the 17th member of this Baylor 2019 recruiting class, and another Florida kid coming to Baylor.
Yep, 6 foot plus is always good in the defensive secondary, and I know that's what they've been looking for. Now, they've shown that if you're enough of a playmaker, they'll be willing, in the case of Midway's Travius Hodges, to extend an offer, but you got to be one heck of a playmaker like he is. But they are ideally looking for taller defensive backs, so he certainly fits the profile and will be easily 200 after, like, 2 weeks at Baylor probably, because they will get him to the bank and in that weight room, and he shouldn't have too much of a problem, I think, getting to 200. So 6'1", 200 will be pretty nice little safety to have. So, yeah, Cecil Powell led it off earlier this week with his commitment. First commit in a while, too. Like, you forget how much they did so early on, and there's been little blips here and there, but, I mean, this class has been pretty much the same for, you know, a long time now. So nice little kaboom there, and little did we know that a little while later, I don't know, like an hour or two later, there would be another kaboom, and it's the young man that we mentioned a few minutes ago, Neandre Zuzua, out of Monroe College, Monroe Junior College up in the Northeast, and another area of need. And this is certainly an area of need, the defensive line, with what they're losing, how young they are, and just the fact that they need to be better on the defensive line if they want to get to where they want to get as a team. So Neandre Zuzua, pretty impressive offer list and some pretty impressive teams that he turned away to commit to Baylor.
Yeah, he turned away. TCU is one of those teams that Baylor got him over, along with Nebraska and Minnesota and Tennessee. So there's a few others, but those were the main ones. And, you know, 6'5", I saw a weight that he posted on Twitter. He's 6'5", 241 already. Okay. So he already has plenty of weight to play at this level, and that's why you bring him in. That's an immediate need that you're filling by bringing in a JUCO like him if you think that he's ready to play immediately. And I think that's what this staff is feeling Niadra can do when he comes in. And I think that he gives the Bears someone that's very dynamic, can get after the quarterback, which they definitely need, can give them depth there as well. And you never know. I mean, if he's able to put on enough weight, maybe he can play some defensive end as well, which would be nice to allow James Lynch to, you know, slide into the middle more consistently if you're able to have another guy that you can throw out there. But yeah, him and BJ Thompson on the two ends at the same time would be one heck of a duo. So that's definitely something to look forward to. But yeah, 7'1 wingspan. I mean, this guy
should be able to block or deflect some passes.
Yeah,
think.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just a guy that you watch the film and he goes in, he makes plays, he hits hard. He had 5 sacks this past year in junior college, which is obviously a bigger step up than high school for sure. But yeah, I think he's a guy that can come in and do a lot of things immediately. And that's the big thing with him. Being a JUCO, I believe he's expected to come in and make an impact next year. And so we'll see how it plays out. But he was a big one. He was one that the staff prioritized as a guy that they needed to get, you know, to have a successful year next year. And so that's why they did it.
So Powell and Zuzua now in the fold for Baylor. And they have just a few days remaining until the early national signing day. I want to get to that in a moment, but I do want to hit on a couple of team notes. So they get the good news this week with the two new commits. And as of this recording, and the coaching carousel can be crazy, but we can't eliminate one job Fran Brown might have gone and taken. Don't know what the future holds for him, other than we do know the future is very bright for Fran Brown. He will become a head coach one day, sooner rather than later, at a good program. But he did interview earlier this week on Monday with Temple, and then you didn't really hear too much after the fact about that. And if anything, I saw more and more candidates suddenly popping up on the radar that Temple was interviewing. As of this recording, they have apparently hired Miami defensive coordinator Manny Diaz, who many of us know for putting together one of the worst UT defenses in history and getting completely obliterated by BYU, giving up, what was it, like 500 yards rushing to Taysom Hill and company a few years back.
Taysom Hill's looking like he's pretty good, though, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's
he's good, but he wasn't running like that on everybody.
No, he wasn't.
That was like historically bad for UT, but he's also got some skins on the wall. Can't define him just by that one performance or you know, a few performances while at Texas. He's certainly a better coach than he was a few years ago back then, and he is leaving Miami to become the next head coach at Temple, so it will not be Fran Brown, as many kind of feared. It will be Manny Diaz, and there's certainly, you know, I had one guy say, because I put out the tweet, I said, for the time being, Baylor fans can breathe a sigh of relief that Fran Brown's going to be around. He's not going to be the next head coach at Temple. But I also do realize, for the time being, that's why I said that, that's going to happen at some point. Who knows when, who knows where, but that's in his future. And so that's a little sigh of relief, I think, to have him around. He's a great recruiter, and I know we'll talk about him more in the mailbag with some of the questions, but you know, pretty big time, I think, with signing day so close to have him sticking around.
Yeah, no doubt it's big to keep him, but I think the writing was pretty much on the wall with that one when he wasn't offered after his interview on Monday. Usually if a program waits around and keeps interviewing people, that usually means that they've kind of gone a different direction. And so, you know, the rumor is that Mike Elko, the defense coordinator at A&M, was offered the job first, declined it, decided to stay with A&M. And then, of course, Manny Diaz gets the offer next. You never know how the list could have gone down after that. But,
well, another name that was rumored to be talking with Temple suddenly was Todd Orlando.
Yeah, he was another one. Yeah, and Dom Brown at Michigan was another name. So they were definitely looking to make a big splash hire on the defensive side of the ball. But it doesn't stay in the Matt Rhule coaching tree now as it moves to Manny Diaz, who, you know, to his credit, did pretty well at Miami the past 2 years. Got a lot of excitement last year, of course, with the turnover chain.
Yes.
But, yeah.
That was really lame this year, by the way.
Oh, it was bad. When you're not in the top 10, not competing for much, it's really lame.
Yeah, it's too gimmicky, suddenly.
But, yeah, great to keep Fran, especially this close to the signing day, like you mentioned. And I think it's going to be great for Baylor to conclude this class. But I don't even know if he would have left that it would have completely drastically shifted everything. But it definitely provides more security for all the recruits, I feel like.
Yeah, and Matt Rhule had kind of a cryptic tweet when that news was announced. He just put out RIP. And who knows what the heck that meant, but some have jumped to the conclusion, rightfully or wrongfully, I don't know, that he was not that happy with Fran Brown not getting that Temple job. And I could totally see that. I don't know if that's at all what it was in reference to, but it was, you talk about just a vague tweet. That was as vague as it gets, RIP. So I did see Marcus Satterfield, who's on the Baylor staff, was at Temple as well with that whole crew, and he was one of the ones to like it. I normally don't dig that deep, but that was noticeable because I was just trying to figure out, like, who's reacting to this. And so I do wonder if there's something there. And quite frankly, would there have been a better first head coaching job for Fran Brown than Temple? It was clear when they had former players talking about raising $20,000 or having had to raise $20,000 just to get support behind him last week, how much he's beloved up there. So I think Temple fans will probably be fine with Manny Diaz. My only thing about that hire, and I'm no expert, obviously, but you're looking at another guy who's going to probably be gone in a couple years if he's any good whatsoever. I mean, if he just gets them back to a couple of bowl games and competes for the AAC, as Matt Rhule did and as Jeff Collins did before taking the Georgia Tech job, then you're probably having to do this again in 2 years, if not a year from now. And Fran would have been a guy that probably would have stuck around for a while. But okay, that's Temple's decision.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised that they didn't hire the interim, Ed Foley, who would have kept it in.
Did you get swooped up in all of his?
I sure did.
His viral media conversation.
I felt like that was his tryout to be the coach right there.
Yeah, but bring him down to Waco. Let's go.
But he was under Coach Rhule's coaching tree as well, so that's another guy they passed on. And you know, it seemed like he'd be a good fit. Actually, that's who I thought they were going to end up hiring, but they went a different direction. And yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be gone in 2 years to go be a head coach, which is typically how that works. But yeah, for the time being, it's good for Baylor, though. You know, another big time program's trying to hire one of your coordinators. I mean, that's a good thing. That means that your team's competing for something, and that means that other schools are taking notice about You know, the kind of things that you're building at your program.
Yeah, you want your coaches being named in these types of searches. If they're not, and you're having some moderate to good success and they're not being mentioned, you'd question why they're not getting more love in that regard. So Fran Brown will be bigger and better and will be the head coach of some school one day, if not Baylor, you know, years from now. I mean, who knows? But not getting the Temple job this time around, then you have to wonder how the staff kind of reacted to that, just given their ties and their belief. I would imagine that he would have been a great fit there as a head coach. Also this week, in addition to the two new commits, and in addition to the Fran Brown news, Jalen Hurd, who we know now will not play in the bowl game due to injury or really preparing for the NFL draft slash injury. He's been invited and accepted his invitation to the Reese's Senior Bowl. So Jalen Hurd will don the Baylor helmet one more time. And we'll do so down at the annual All-Star game. And it'd be interesting to see in the bowl game, like without him in there, what this offense will look like. I know there's been a lot of conversation when the news came out that he was not going to play in the game, that there's the pessimistic side of, oh my gosh, what are we going to do for like first downs and big plays and things? But there's also the optimistic side of, hey, now we get a preview of next year, basically. I mean, sure, Platt won't be here, and there'll be a few others that will be gone that will probably be contributors in that game, but no one has been as big of a contributor statistically as Jalen Hurd was this past year.
No, you're exactly right, and congrats to him. I mean, he deserves this, no doubt, and it'll be fun. You know, I've watched the Senior Bowl a couple times, and they usually film some of their practices. They show it on ESPN and stuff, so kind of get an inside look to see what he's doing and see how he's progressing after his minor surgery. But yeah, that'll be really cool to see a little bit more of Jalen Hurd in some Baylor gear a little bit. And yeah, it'll absolutely be cool, and it just stinks that he won't be able to play in the bowl game. It's just one of those things where you take it for granted because no one knew that the Tech game was going to be his last game, and then it just hits you, he's not going to play in a Baylor game again. And mm-hmm. He only had the 1 year, so definitely stinks there, but I think that this is great for him, and it'll give him a chance to showcase his abilities one more time, which I think will be definitely needed heading into the NFL draft.
Well, and it'll be good, too, to have a Baylor name called in the upcoming NFL draft. It feels like it's been a little while. I mean, there was, nobody last year, right? I don't recall anybody last year. The year prior, like, the headliner was Rico. I mean, that was like the big football pick.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll get someone drafted at least in the first couple of days. He won't be a first day selection because it's just the first round. But, yeah, good opportunity for him. So, Baylor football post Jalen Hurd will get the opportunity to showcase themselves for the first time in the bowl game. And speaking of the bowl game, next week we'll do our rather large bowl preview, and we'll also have that first national signing day in which a majority of Baylor's class will be signing next Wednesday. We'll cover all of that. So next week will probably be a pretty heavy podcast. And then, I mean, after that, it's going to be Christmas break and New Year's and post-bowl game and all of that. We'll figure out the podcast situation definitively then, but looking like we may just do a big podcast next week covering signing day and previewing the bowl game, and then be back in the new year to start getting ready for the next signing day and to cover the result of the bowl game. But let's get into some recruiting here. As we mentioned, the two new commits this week, so now they're at 18 commits overall, which is, if you had gone back a few months, past what we thought they would have. By about 3 scholarships, but here we are at 18, and there's like 75 offers out to guys right now. So, Grayson, what can you tell us about what's currently going on in the recruiting phase of things?
So, there's a ton going on, and that's just like you mentioned. It's very interesting. There's probably, I think Colt and I came up with, there's probably about 15 names that are still floating around out there as very likely that Baylor is still really close to in on them, basically in the mix for them. And so that's pretty interesting because you don't know how many spots you have left. You don't know if more JUCOs could get offers. And so it's really just, it's ever changing, and that's how recruiting always is. But you know, some of the bigger names we're trying to figure out. So Sam Snyder is a kid. I'll give a little update on him because it's kind of big sort of what's going on with him. But so he's going on an official to Missouri. And he has family in Missouri. His family's from St. Louis. So there's definitely a little bit of a connection there. But he gave up going on his Michigan visit to go on this Missouri visit. And the Baylor coaches, someone posted on the board that they've seen the Baylor coaches in his living room more than they've seen their own living room.
Ain't that the truth? Me too.
Yeah, I think they've seen him probably maybe 5 or 6 times this month.
Mm-hmm.
It has been remarkable to see the kind of effort they've put in on this kid. But so he's going to Missouri this weekend. He took his official to Baylor already. We know he loved it. We know he's got a great relationship with the Baylor staff. And when he visited, he was committed to Louisville. He decommitted. And so now it's pretty much, if he decides to sign in the early signing period, it's either going to be Missouri or Baylor. And Missouri just offered yesterday, or I guess Tuesday. And so that's kind of the interesting dynamic there. Is he going to value the fact that he's got family there? Or is he going to value the relationships that he's built? It'll be very interesting. I'm not 100% sold on it yet. We have a prediction in that he will be a Baylor Bear, but this Missouri visit definitely shakes things up a little bit. I am really curious to see what happens there, but if he does sign early, that's Baylor's best shot at getting him. If he waits till February, I think it's going to be very hard for Baylor to get him, because that's when the Michigan offer will come, the Florida State interest will peak, and I believe UCLA is another one that's trying to get in on him too. So this is going to be a very interesting weekend for him, and we're going to find out whether Baylor's going to try to take a tight end for this class or not, probably.
Yeah, he is, for those that don't follow recruiting real closely, out of Orange Park, Florida, Fleming Island High School, there on the northern east coast of Florida, almost near like South Carolina, quite frankly. But yeah, he's a big target, man. He's a big dude. And it's just interesting. What do you think the thought process is with him, given their depth at tight end with two in the last two classes apiece? I mean, you've got four young guys. Henley played a ton this year. I don't know if anybody other than Charlie Brewer was as sore postseason as probably Christoph Henley was. And a lot of that was him just experience being a freshman and being a little bit undersized still. But what do you think the thought process is here?
I think it basically tells me that they're going to want to do two tight end sets. Mm-hmm. I think that's basically what it comes down to. And to have a guy that's 6'5", 215 that runs in the 4.5s, you're not going to find that very often. So if you think you can get it in this class, you got to get it while you can. And so I don't know if that means he would come in and play immediately, but I think what it means is you're starting to see that trend that, you know, we pretty much talked about since Matt Rhule got here, that he wants to use tight ends. And, you know, I don't know how many people out there have seen Stanford play, mm-hmm. But a lot of times you'll see Stanford line up tight ends outside and throw it up to them and let them go make plays, have very athletic tight ends that can do a lot of different things. I think that's what they want from Sam Snyder. Even to use him as a big receiver like that, as we've seen in the Big 12, that works with guys with Alan Lazard, Hakeem Butler, even Lil Jordan Humphrey, Colin Johnson, just big guys, big targets that you can put out wide and throw it up to him. That's a big deal, and it's you can take advantage of some mismatches in that regard. So, yeah, I think they're just one of those that's best available, and you got to get it while you can.
I'll throw in one recruiting note I had this week, one in comparison to you and Colt's like 150 recruiting notes over the last couple of weeks. But I did speak briefly with Midway safety Travius Hodges, who we've talked about on the podcast before. He's just a dynamic playmaker. He is on the shorter side, which is not what they ideally look for. And I asked him about Baylor and where they kind of stand. He's officially visiting this weekend. And then he's apparently going to go and visit K-State, which is his only other big offer. They've got a new head coach there now, so it'll be interesting to see how he's viewed by that coaching staff. He might, you know, might be a situation where they say, okay, no, we're going to move on to somebody else. I don't know. But as I posted on the premium, which I feel fine now saying it on the podcast because it's about 4 days later, I don't know if he's going to put his situation in jeopardy or if they view him as a take all the way. But he is going to wait and see what happens there. I don't know if there's other schools maybe chirping in his ear saying, hold on, we're watching your film, wait a little while. But Travius will not be signing as of right now on the early signing day, taking a K-State visit after this weekend. So we'll see how that shakes out. But at the same time, as much as I love him as a player and enjoyed watching him, he's not a must-have in this class, in my opinion. I think that They've addressed safety pretty well. I think Powell's commitment the other night, kind of if you miss out on Travis, is fine. I think if you miss out on him, it's okay, and I would love to see him in green and gold. But I also realize space is limited, and timing is everything, and so we'll see if timing with him and Baylor bites him in the end. But you know what? They'll have somebody else there in place.
Yeah, my thought process on him is that it's either commit now or I just don't think it's going to happen. Yeah. I don't think that – I honestly think he's a must-have if he wants to sign early. Mm-hmm. I think then, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a local kid. They haven't gotten local kids.
They haven't touched Midway,
yeah.
Really.
And so to get a guy like that that you know is a playmaker, that you know is going to be a consistent guy that has played on winning football teams, mm-hmm. that's a big deal. And to me – you want guys like that, but you don't want to risk a spot on that. And that's why I would say you have to get him now. If you don't get him now, I just don't see them being able to hold a spot open all the way till February for him. I just think that would be a little too much to ask. And
yeah.
I think they would probably move on at that point.
Yeah, with as many offers as they have out too, and as limited as spacing is in this class, I mean, they're looking at 5, 6, 7 spots, whatever it is. I don't know. Maybe there's already... you know, something that's been talked about between the staff and Travis for all we know. Maybe he just comes in this weekend, drives the 15, 10 minutes, whatever it is, from Hewitt to McLean and the campus, and gets blown away and realizes what an opportunity it is, and he just goes ahead and commits, and then, hey, this is all that we've talked about for 5 minutes is meaningless. But if he does, in fact, wait, I'm there with you. I think that they've got to do what's best for them, and he's got to do what's best for him, and we'll see. But, he's going to be on one of the official visits this weekend, and there are others coming in, and there's a lot of other recruiting things to get to, so what else do you want to throw out there at the
Yeah, paper? I'm going to throw out just talking a little bit about this offensive line group, because Baylor's put out 3 offers this week, 2 to JUCO offensive linemen and 1 to so he's in prep school, so mm-hmm. 1 year removed from high school, but he would still have 5 to play for. So basically just like a high school kid. His name's Davis Dyval. He's currently committed to Temple, interestingly enough, but 6'5", 285. He's from the school that he attends is Brigton Academy, and it's in Maine.
Brighton, maybe?
Maybe. Maybe it's – I mean, no. It's definitely
Is there no Brigton. H in there?
Yeah, no, okay. No H.
Brigton?
It's D's in front of the G, interestingly enough. It's very okay. Tough to pronounce. But anyways, it's in Maine. And I posted this on the board. I don't think
what a hotbed that is.
I don't think I've ever seen or posted anything about a kid that's playing in Maine. So I thought that was kind of interesting to see that. But he's a very good player. He's one that's taking an official this weekend. So 6'5", 285, another big kid. And he's going to be at Baylor along with Blake Bettier, who is a JUCO out of Snow College, which is in Utah, JUCO kid.
That's another new offer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another new offer, 6'6", 285, JUCO, a kid that they're thinking could come in and play immediately, provide depth. He'll be here this weekend, and he's going to have the most interesting officials because I think he's trying to figure out how many officials he can get in before the early signing period because he wants to sign wow. early. So I don't know that he's going to be a full weekend guy, if he's going to be doing midweeks or what, mm-hmm. but he's trying to figure it out, what he's going to do. But I know he will be at Baylor at least for a day. So a
couple hours and he'll head off to the next place.
So we'll see how that works out for him. And then the last one is Paul Matavayo, Poyali, and he is 6'4", 330 pounds. And so I watched his film and I was like, okay, he's a very good player. I can see him fitting well in the offensive line. Then I saw that he was also the MVP of his JUCO league, where he had, I believe, 70 tackles, 30 tackles for loss, and 12 sacks.
30 tackles for loss?
Yes, wow. At nose tackle. And jeez. So then it got me thinking, maybe this is a guy that they're going to try to put on the on the defensive
sure.
line. There's a chance. So either way, they're recruiting him for both. I don't think they even know which side they want him to put on yet, but he's another guy. So all 3 of them got an offer within the past week. So they're really trying to stock up on offensive linemen. And, of course, that to go along with Isaiah Hookfin, who is pretty much the only high school guy they have out right now that they're still trying to land as an offensive lineman. He's from Dulles. And he'll be taking an official visit to Texas. So,
boo.
Yeah, so they're they're trying to get offensive linemen. They are absolutely trying everything they can, and they already have one committed with Elijah Ellis, so keep that in mind.
And the Ellis pickup looks better and better from when they first offered him and he committed. He was very unknown at that point, and then Paris had a fantastic season, and he was a big part of that. Why do you think the sudden rush for O-linemen? Because I know, and I've already I either made this up in my head or I definitely read it on the board earlier today. There's concerns of, like, what is this? Is, like, are there O-linemen transferring out, or are there guys who aren't good enough? What's the case? Why do you think there's a sudden rush on these big guys?
I think it's just a chance to get better. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a chance to
might just be better than the guys they have right now.
Upgrade your talent pool.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason not to do that. And you also have to remember, you know, a lot of these guys are still really young.
Yeah, they
are. I mean, it's been two classes, so, you know,
Jason Moore just turned, 19?
I think so, yeah. So you're talking really young guys that, you know, are still not fully developed and still trying to figure it out. And I think if you have a chance to go get a JUCO that's, you know, 21 years old, you got to go do it. I mean, you're upgrading the size of your offensive line and the competitiveness of it, and might as well make that group push each other because they need it. I mean, that group needs to take a huge step next year. And the other thing I think it tells me is that they're trying to win now.
They should.
They would not take JUCOs if they didn't think they could come out and possibly win a Big 12 championship within the next 2 years. They just aren't built like that. They don't do that. And so it's very interesting to see them take so many JUCOs and extend so many offers.
Well, I know there's been some on the board who have been vocal about wanting to see more JUCOs because that does kind of say we're going to win and win now. And I think, too, regardless of what their expectations were, I think it's fair to say that their expectations in year one were better than 1-11. I think that was shocking to everybody and really was like a look-in-the-mirror type of thing. And it was much more of a difficult change than imagined originally. So I don't know that 1-11 was certainly reflective of how bad that football team was, but I don't think they expected that football team to be that bad initially. And I think this year they bounced back with five more wins and arguably could have had a couple more or a couple less, depending on which, you know, half empty or half full you want to look at. But now that you have reached a bowl game in year two, there's no, like, let's go backwards and not make it next year. Like, now it's almost to the point where, okay, we've reached it now. Now this is the bottom floor. Now we've got to go make the bowl game every single year, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the expectation. And, you know, a big part of that, those first two classes, though, were them saying, we're trying to build something here, and we know we're going to need younger guys that are going to build and build and build. And I just think that I don't think they went into this past season saying, oh, we're going to win the Big 12 championship. I don't believe they did that. So they didn't take JUCOs. They didn't take me JUCOs, and they didn't offer me JUCOs. But then this year, I think it's a little different. And I think you're seeing, you know, maybe you hit the Big 12 at the right time next season. Maybe you see a lot of teams come back down to earth a little bit, which is very possible. A lot of good quarterbacks leaving, a lot of good players leaving.
Three first-year head coaches.
Yeah, and maybe you hit it while it's hot, and you're able to get in there and actually compete in every single game. And I'm telling you, I think this signifies that they think that they can win a Big 12 championship within 2 years. I truly believe that.
Well, here's the deal on that. You look at Texas next year, I think they'll be the heavy favorite because they've got so many pieces coming back, especially if all of their underclassmen like Johnson and Humphrey decide to return, then they're going to be a without a doubt favorite, I think. And as we all know, it doesn't take much for them to be the favorite with the media. So I think they'll be the heavy favorite. OU's obviously losing Kyler. You can't imagine they're going to have a third straight Heisman Trophy winning quarterback as he won that award this past weekend. So I would expect Oklahoma to still be very, very good, but just not to the level they've been the last couple of years. And the thing with OU, that was one of their two really just ugly, ugly losses along with West Virginia. West Virginia, there's no chance they're going to be as good as they were this year because you're just not going to be losing Will Grier.
Plummet. Yep.
Yeah, so West Virginia and OU, the two teams that absolutely drilled you and made you like it, they're also both at home next year, and they're both going to be slightly, if not immensely, worse, although worse doesn't necessarily mean bad, but worse than they were this year, and all the other teams you played with. And in many cases, Texas was on the road. Iowa State was on the road. Next year's schedule, Baylor fans, if you have the opportunity to get season tickets, if I had the opportunity to get season tickets, if I wasn't covering them and sitting in the press box, next year would be the year to do it, in my opinion. Not because it's year three of rule or anything like that, because the schedule sets up so nicely for them. And I know they still got, you know, some tough road games or whatever, but man, as tough as it was this year, like four top 25 road games in the span of 6 weeks or whatever the heck it was, this can be flipped on its head next year.
Yeah, absolutely. The schedule sets up pretty well. Like you said, you get a lot of these teams at home, but I'm just looking at it, I'm thinking, you know, I just think it's telling me something. And I look around and I go, there's a lot of talent leaving. We've seen West Virginia when they don't have Will Grier. It is tough to watch. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, bits and pieces of, you know, teams that are losing other guys, and you just go, I don't know, you know, what's Kansas going to be next year? Probably not very good. Kansas State, you lose your greatest coach in history. No way are you better than what you were this year, in my opinion.
And Tech, but those, I was going to say, all three of those programs right now, you would think they're all going to win a championship next year because they're all riding that post high of a new hire and a new face and a new voice, especially in Manhattan, where, I mean, it's been Bill Snyder for ages other than the Ron Prince disaster. So they're all going to believe they're probably going to be better next year than they actually will be. I think they'll all have first-year stumbling blocks along the way. And so, yeah, those new coaches are great and everything. Might turn out to be really good, but I just don't imagine any of the three, Les Miles, Pettigrew, or not, coming in year one and just flipping them on their heads and making them, you know, world beaters.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about this. You know, usually it's the best quarterbacks that win the Big 12. That drives who wins the Big 12 typically. And I think you would probably make the argument that Sam Ellinger is probably the best returning quarterback. I think that's a pretty good argument there. But then after that, you go, okay, Brewer, Purdy, Bowman, in some order, those three, because I'm trying to think. Then you look around, Cornelius is gone from Oklahoma State. They're probably going to ride with Spencer Sanders, who's coming up. He could be a great player, but
it probably will end up being better than Cornelius over time, which won't be saying a whole lot now. I would say Cornelius was not a bad quarterback. He just wasn't as good as, like, Mason Rudolph.
No.
But
and Sanders will be like Mason Rudolph eventually.
Eventually, but not probably next year. Yeah,
and you look at that, Kansas State, no idea. They didn't even know who their quarterback was half the year.
That was part of why he's no longer there.
Kansas has no idea. You know, and so
TCU?
Who's their quarterback?
Justin Rogers healthy?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Michael Collins will be back.
Oh, well, I don't fear him again.
No, but that's what I'm saying. So there's a lot of teams, a lot of doubts all around the Big 12. And one thing you can say about Baylor is they return a ton again for the second straight year. So that's where I think this is coming from. And if you can upgrade at all, at any position, Baylor needs to do that. And I think that's what they're taking advantage of right now. They see an opportunity and they're trying to get there. I think they take two JUCOs on the offensive line when it's said and done.
Elsewhere in recruiting, kind of what else is going on at this point?
I mean, other than that, it's kind of, so I guess we'll go to Seth Coleman a little bit, because I think he's one that needs to be mentioned. He's
from where?
He's from Florida.
Okay, so I'm glad you're bringing him up, because I was going to ask you one thing about Cecil Powell's commitment, and then Zuzua, like the effects they have on other guys. I know there's been kind of a stop. That's not even a word. They've kind of stopped, according to just whispers out there, because of the two or because of Powell in particular, kind of backed away from maybe a couple of the other targets we've been hearing a lot about this week.
Yeah, they backed away. So I'll bring up who they backed away from. So Isaiah Howard is one that they did back away from. He goes to Grayson High School in Georgia, and they backed away from him, and he was one that a lot of Baylor fans were excited about. I think he's a very good player, and I think they just ran out of room kind of for their priority list. And so it could have been Zuzua took his spot. Mm-hmm. It definitely could have been. And so he's no longer taking an official visit this weekend. But moving on from him, Seth Coleman is one where you go, okay, so he's an Illinois commit. He is visiting Illinois this weekend. So it seems like everything's going Illinois' way. Maybe Baylor moves on from him, right? Possibly. It could be that. Nope. Baylor was there today, again, visiting him. And so it is clear that he is a priority. I mean, if they're visiting him the day, you know, 2 days before he goes to Illinois, it is clear they're trying to talk to him, trying to stay connected with him before he goes. And he took his official visit to Baylor already. And so that one's going to be really interesting. And he's going to remind folks of BJ Thompson a whole lot. Very, very similar body type. I think Seth Coleman's a little bit thicker, a little bit bigger. And so that could be a good thing as well. So he's a priority for them, and athletically he jumps off the charts, and another guy to rush the passer.
Just have to hope he isn't hypnotized by Lovie Smith's magnificent old man beard.
Yeah.
I love Lovie Smith. Me and him, fellow East Texans, so I'm a big Lovie fan, but it's fun to see the way he was with the Bears. He's all clean-shaven, and now he's at Illinois, and he's just like old man, just doesn't care.
He's finding a way to recruit people.
And he's sturdy there, apparently, that they're not like giving up on him anytime soon, even though it's been kind of rough starting out. That, I mean, there is, I think, some level of security there, but even then, not to the level of security Matt Rhule has.
No, absolutely not. And one thing about Lovie is he got a contract extension this year, but it was really only because they couldn't pay his buyout. Because his buyout was something like $14 million or something. So they gave him an extension, and that means that his buyout next year will be much cheaper. So you could see them buy him out next year when they have another bad year and don't make a bowl. But because they have not been competitive in the least. So that'll be interesting. But he's got two, I believe, ESPN top 150 players were committed. One from Texas, Marquez Beeson, out of Bishop Dunn. So he's finding ways to get guys to come there. And so it'll be interesting if Baylor can find a way to land Seth Coleman. But they've made it clear he is another priority for this class.
All right. So Seth Coleman, another name. Yeah, they were Illini were 4-8 this year. 2-7 of the Big Ten, lost 3 straight to close out the season. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, not good. And so that makes you wonder, why would you want to go there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good education. I'll say that.
Yeah,
good
it education. Is. It for is. Sure. I'll give them that. But it's just, you know, you see a program on the rise. Why would you want to go to a program that just continues to be very mediocre? What, did you see a blowout on there?
I saw a few. They lost 6 of their last 7. Got beat 46-7 by Purdue, got beat 49-20 by Wisconsin, got beat by 63-33 by Maryland, got beat 54-35 by Nebraska, 63-0 at the hands of Iowa, and then nearly had the big upset to close out the year on a high note, 24-16 against Northwestern. I think like 4 of those were on the road, but whatever.
They do need help on defense. Blowouts. I heard a lot of 50 and 60 point games on there. My goodness. Those. Yeah, that is that's rough. Again, that's just where I go, why would you want to do that? I don't know, but again, programs are going to sell different things.
People said that when Matt Rhule was recruiting that first class.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. That is absolutely true. As far as other names, you know, it's pretty much, those are the main ones. Everyone else is pretty much steady right now as we're trying to just figure out where they're going to go. Langston Anderson, of course, has his top 5. He's announcing on the 19th between Baylor, Oklahoma State, Auburn, Washington State, and Ole Miss. And yeah, that's pretty much it for what's going on in recruiting right now. Those are kind of the main names that are still out there that Baylor's still in on. Of course, there's a few others. Demarius Good is one that Baylor feels like they're in a good position with. He went to Pittsburgh last weekend on an official.
UCF's after him as well. Former assistant visiting him.
So it wouldn't shock me if he took an official there this weekend. That would not shock me at all, but don't know on that yet. Drew Mathis got offers from Oregon and UCLA.
Hey, Demarius, if you're listening, you'll never play for a national title. I can guarantee you that.
If you don't know that by now.
They're not allowed in.
No.
It's very clear.
Drew Mathis, JUCO linebacker, got Oregon and UCLA offers after he left Baylor's official visit. So.
That seems like a big priority as well as linebacker.
Yeah, it definitely could be if it's a JUCO, in my opinion. I think that they've pretty much, I think you look at those safety linebacker guys, I think you see a few of them that are going to for sure be linebackers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to add depth, I mean, they're so young there still, and they weren't great in the second unit of that group. It was pretty much just first string or nothing.
Yeah.
And so they're definitely going to have to take a step there. And whether they have that on campus or not is to be seen with Ashton Logan, Bryson Jackson. Is Terrell Bernard going to take that next step next year? But they need those guys to step up because that 2017 class was supposed to really provide that depth and that stability to the linebacker position.
Okay, so there's all the recruiting that you're going to handle or can handle on this episode. Obviously, a lot more conversation and a lot of nuggets and notes and things of that nature over on the premium section of Sikkim365.com. So if that whets your appetite a little bit, you can get a lot more over on the premium section. Sign up today. It'll be worth every penny. And now it is time to get into some mailbag on this edition of the Fast Friday podcast. We'll start off with a Yankee Bear. Who are the best remaining recruits Baylor's recruiting from the following categories? So you ready for this? High school offensive lineman.
Okay, high school offensive lineman is definitely Isaiah Hookfin, Abdullis.
Yeah. And like he's visiting Texas.
Visiting Texas this weekend, but I think Baylor's in a good spot with him. I think it's going to be between those two.
I don't think we've had enough time to really marinate on the last 2 years because it's been so fast and furious. But that seems to me like that would be one of the bigger recruiting battles if they were to land him.
It would be probably the biggest recruiting upset that they've pulled off. Okay. I think it sure would. Yeah, the only one that I find intriguing as far as a comparison might be Tyquan Thornton because he decommitted from Florida and flipped to Baylor after decommitting from Baylor. Usually once a guy decommits, you don't see them come back. So,
And that was a smart decision because their receivers don't really do much for the Gators.
No, and I think he's already playing.
Yeah, he's already had a better year than most Florida receivers for the last several years. Who's the best JUCO offensive lineman remaining?
I'm going to go with Blake Bettier on this one. I think they've made him a big priority, and he's a guy, 6 Power 5 offers in the last week. Big Power 5 offers. So he's rising big time, and he's the one that I think he's the best JUCO out.
All right. Who is the best high school defensive back?
Peyton Powell. And he's a quarterback, but
The mystery.
But I think it's Peyton Powell. He's currently committed to Texas, but
he was definitely not on a visit this past weekend.
Right? Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not as I was told.
Yes. So I don't know what you people have heard or seen, but that definitely did not happen. Best JUCO linebacker.
JUCO linebacker, the only one really is Drew Mathis. Yep. So talked about him.
JUCO or high school wide receiver has to be Langston, right?
No.
No. Okay.
No, it is actually Demarius Good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It is actually Demarius Good. I view him as a receiver. Others view him as a running back. I just think he's a good football player on offense, and he's going to give Langston a run for his money for who the better receiver is between those two. I think he's personally better. I think he's a little more explosive. Langston would be second, though, in my mind.
I don't want to reveal too much about the premium side of things, but this was more or less just like a little note, and I'm not going to pass along much there, but there was a note earlier this week that I wanted to get your opinion on, and obviously we'll have to see it come to fruition and everything, but it seemed like some pretty good insight on the skill player front that Jonah White, the athlete commit out of Merkle, was looking at the running back spot, which was very interesting to me. That was a great note. I forget who posted. That was you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it wasn't that great, but still. No, that was a good little note. Apologies for the premium guys, but you had that out there a few days ago. That was interesting.
Yeah, I did. I actually talked to Jonah after his visit because, you know, most times on these officials, things become clearer. And, you know, Hakeem told me he's safety. For sure, he's locked in. And I was curious because Jonah's a guy that we're all kind of trying to figure out where's he fit in. And, yeah, running back is the position that he's going to start at when he gets at Baylor. I'm not going to promise he finishes there because we've seen this staff move guys. But, yeah, starting at running back when he gets here. And, that's an interesting note because now they have him and Quaylen as two guys that will start off at running back. And I think that means that Good would be a receiver when he gets here.
Man, that if everything just fell into place, it could be such a good class.
Oh my.
So many things addressed and so many dynamic players at various positions. It could be great. It's already a really good class, don't get me wrong, but it could be really good.
If they can take 6 more guys, this will probably be the best class in Baylor football history. Wow. I wouldn't, and I'm not even going to hesitate on that. Yeah. If they can land 6 more.
Just let it breathe for a second. Okay, now that everybody's gone crazy. Let's finish off Yankee Bears questions here, and we do appreciate a Yankee Bear. Who on BU's team earns Big 12 first or second team accolades next year? Man, it could be like 17 guys. I mean, really, first and second team. There was only, three or four this year? I want to say Clay Johnston was one of them. Jalen Hurd was the newcomer of the year. Drew Gaylett's first team. I think there might have been one more.
I think that was it. Okay. The rest were honorable mention.
Yeah. So first or second team next year. Who do you think? Anybody pop off?
Yeah, so I have four names. Okay. And it might surprise some people, but I think if Baylor's going to compete, that means that Charlie Brewer is on the first or second team next year.
That would be my go-to start. Yeah.
So he'll be one. Clay Johnston, of course. Of course. He has to be, period. He has to be. James Lynch, I think James Lynch will actually move all the way up to first team next year. I think he makes that big push.
Yeah, I didn't mention him in the second team, did I?
No.
Or I didn't mention him being an Big 12. Okay, yeah, so James Lynch was on.
But there. I think he makes that step. I think he'll be first team. I think Mims is the other one. If Charlie has a big year, I think that means good things for Denzel Mims as well. So those are the four that come to mind. Do you have any other guys that you're thinking maybe?
Nobody out of linebacking core other than Clay. Secondary, I don't know if I'm ready to like get too caught up with like Kalen and
or Graylin, like not Tejada. Tejada, okay.
I could see all those guys being borderline.
See, I think they all are going to play so much. So it's like who, Harrison Hand, well, like where are you fitting them in? Who's going to be just the stable?
That and, there'll be a lot of great corner candidates from a lot of other schools, too. So, yeah, I think the ones that you mentioned are the pretty surefire best bets for next year. I can't – a guy, if he ever could just take, like, a step up and he started to at the end of the year, I don't think first team, but maybe second team, like a Bravion Roy, if he ever just dominated and stayed healthy at nose tackle – but, that's maybe stretching it a little bit. So, yeah, we'll stick with those guys. Who will be the most beatable team next year, Oklahoma, Texas, or West Virginia?
West Virginia by a mile.
Yeah, I agree. More likely, Baylor offense scores more points next year than they did this year, or BU's defense allows fewer than they did this year?
I think they're going to do both, but I think the defense won. And the reason I say the defense won is because just like we talked about, I don't think
to Morgantown.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get blown out like they did this year. I just don't see that happening where they're giving up 66 to Oklahoma and, 57 to West Virginia. I don't think they're going to have those games. And they only gave up 31.2 this year, which isn't good, but it's not as bad as I thought it could be with those two games in there. So if you get rid of those two, I bet it's down, to 30.
Talk BU basketball. No. Next question. all right. What will their conference record end up being? Talking Baylor basketball. I think it's going to be about 500 at best, honestly. I think it could even be a little bit under 500. I'm not sitting here with grand expectations for this team, I'll be honest with you. So it was with a good team last year. I think it was about 500. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. So I think it'll be slightly under that. Around that somewhere, but nothing crazy over 500.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much somewhere in between 8-10 and 10-8, which is what they were last year. I think they will improve. I think they will get better, but the Big 12 has a lot of teams that are good. Mm-hmm. Like I look at Kansas.
It's a basketball conference.
Yeah, it has been. But Kansas, Iowa State, Kansas State, Texas Tech,
TCU.
Yeah.
Name all the schools. Yeah,
I mean those are all schools that you're thinking, man, you're lucky to get one from them. And so Baylor's really going to have to play extremely well to get – if they get to 10-8, they got a shot at making the tournament. Yeah. Anything below that is going to be tough, especially with that Texas Southern loss earlier this year.
Yes. What's on the menu for Christmas dinner? typically around my place, it's like Christmas ham and your typical sides like mashed potatoes and things like that. Thanksgiving is far more of a to-do in my family than Christmas dinner, really. But I know some people go all out for both.
Yeah, mine's usually I'll probably someone in my family will pull out some steaks and we'll grill some steaks, have some potatoes. And can't go wrong with that. So, yeah, Thanksgiving is more the traditional meal for us. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'll get this one. Hubs, love the podcast. Looking back over the season, who is your MVP, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment? What you want to go on that one note?
We had the MVP conversation either last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, when we did the superlatives.
Yeah, we did a superlatives episode. I want to say it was a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. So you might want to go back and listen to that because we went over like six or seven categories. Yeah. And on MVP, I said Jalen Hurd, but you said Charlie Brewer, and you kind of had me leaning like, I don't know. I still stick with Jalen Hurd there just because of how important he was and how many times he moved the chains, but Charlie's is right there neck and neck with him.
I tried to be a little different on that one. Hurt is the obvious answer. He was unbelievable. It's just Charlie staying healthy, and I just think they would have been terrible without him. But
we also did Biggest Surprise.
We did. I think I went with DT because we eliminated Hurd with the MVP.
And I want to say that I went with Tyquan Thornton having as big of an impact, because back in the spring when we first started doing this podcast, I didn't think he was seeing the field like at all. He was just so skinny, and I don't know. I didn't see him suiting up, but he got a little bit of weight on him. This will be a really big offseason for him and BJ Thompson and those types of guys. But yeah, mine was Tyquan Thornton.
And then disappointment.
I don't think we did that, did we?
I don't think we did.
Yeah, I don't know. What would be my biggest... the TCU game, clearly. Yeah, would be my biggest...
What about one player?
Do you have a player?
I think it's a... Yeah. Mm. Well, I think... Aren't these all players or...
Oh, it doesn't say... It doesn't clarify.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It says MVP, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment. So, yeah, biggest disappointment would be the TCU outcome. Far and away. And as far as a player goes, I mean, I kind of hesitate to really do that on a podcast, but I'd have to give that some thought. I think I really don't know.
I'm with you.
I kind of hate to do that, but I thought they'd get more out of the offensive line, let me say that. I thought the transfers coming in with JCV and Frew was gonna have a little bit more of an impact than it did. I know that Valentine started to really improve, as best I could tell, towards the end of the year. Frew Morgan just never seemed to really settle in and was hurt a lot. So that was disappointing that we didn't see a better step forward from the offensive line.
But
I still go TCU number one.
Yeah, TCU's number one for me too, obviously. That was a very disappointing one. But I'm going to go with the defensive line. And the reason I'm going with that is because I felt like we kind of knew the offensive line was still going to struggle some. Sure. But I don't think I realized that the defensive line was not going to have as much of a step up as I thought they would. I thought they were going to be really, really good. And then, you know, Xavier Jones got hurt early in the year. It didn't seem like Ira ever took that next step that we were all waiting on. It just, the rotation didn't seem to all click the way I thought it would. And Tyrone Hunt was hurt a majority of the year as well. So just not as much depth as I thought there was going to be. So that was kind of disappointing for me, but yeah, that's what I would go with. What are you hearing about any of the red shirts or scout team players that may be ready to contribute next year?
I haven't heard a ton, but I haven't also really dug to find that. I've been kind of focused on just the current guys so much, or the future guys being recruited. So I haven't heard a real ton of scout team talk, or any of the redshirt talk, really, for that matter.
Yeah, the only ones that I've really heard about was from our media time this week, where, you know, Blackmar said Jackson Kimball and Ty Smith were two guys that took a step up. Chris Platt talked about RJ Sneed and Jared Atkinson stepping up. And then I believe it was Ira talked about Solon and Chidi as well. And so those are some names that I do think some of those guys are going to need to step up for Baylor to be good. Solon and Chidi are probably going to have to step up next year for that defensive line with how much they're losing to have a good year. And then, of course, one of Sneed or Atkinson is going to have to as well.
Yeah.
To try to fill in for Hurd.
I think those are the best candidates. That's from the players' mouths themselves, and they're the ones that actually get to watch the scout team and practice against them. And that media session seems like forever ago.
It does, yeah.
It was less than a week ago. It seems like forever ago, and I forgot to bring that up earlier. But we got some good comments from three Houston raised Baylor football players who were excited about going home, and they gave us some good comments. That's up on Sikkim365.com. Baylor Bala, if there are two spots left in this class, hypothetically, which six players would you take? I do love that I saw the thread, and it was very clear. Pick two guys, and then like seven names were given.
Seven, yeah.
It's like people just can't help themselves. Just, I love it. I mean, it's great, and I'm not knocking anything. It's just like two is two. It's not seven. The question is two. Two players, not six.
So
not
what do you,
five, not four. It's two.
So what do you want? Which do you want me to answer, two or six?
Two.
Two? Okay, so I'm going to go with Isaiah Hookfin and Demarius Good.
Yep.
Oh, but, you know, I could see Langston Anderson, and maybe we'll also add Blake Bettier.
Yes.
And maybe we'll also add Seth Coleman.
Right.
And then...
Oh, they're back on Greg now as well.
Oh, we'll bring Greg in as well. And there's... Oh, that's one, two... Oh, Yeah, maybe that's six, not two.
I think you hit it on the head, though. Good and Hook Fenner, yeah. The two, if you could have them, you take those two guys.
Yeah. Also, I just wanted to say on that, Hook Fenn, if he does end up going to Texas, if you replaced him for a JUCO, that would be my next. Like, that would be the next tier. That would be number three. Just to put that out there, a JUCO offensive lineman would be the very next guy. On that list. Hubs also asked you about how you reacted to P.F. Chang's opening in Waco.
Skipped over that. I'm actually going there tonight.
So, are you really?
Yeah.
I went this weekend, so I was actually interested in answering that question. It was really good.
Oh, it's really tremendous. Oh,
amazing.
I've always been a big fan of Asian-style cuisine, and I love P.F. Chang's. And when they announced they're coming to Waco, my mind was blown because I only got to experience it when we typically go on trips, like road trips to Cowboys camp out in California or various places like that. So yeah, it's awesome to have it here. I know it's been pretty busy, and it's good food. I like the I like everything on it, actually. Mongolian beef's my normal go-to, some pot stickers, but very happy.
It was really good. The place is extremely nice too, and thank the Lord, because I know you've been here a while as well. There's no Asian food in Waco. Mama Foo's is like the only one I can think of, and then the new one, Wook. I haven't even been there, but thank the Lord for some P.F. Chang's.
No doubt. No doubt about that. Let's see. Alpha Needle, can you grade each position group by beginning of the year expectations? For example, no one predicted our O-line would be a top two or three Big 12 O-linemen, so based on the beginning of year expectations, how do you grade end of the year actuals for each position group?
So I guess, are we doing letter grades?
How do you want to do it? I guess.
We can do letter grade.
Sure. Quarterback.
Based on the beginning of the year, I'd probably say
expectations. Yes, versus
C plus, maybe a B minus.
Yeah, I'd say B minus at best. Running backs, I'd say. Okay, for example, I'm trying to figure out if we're comparing them to the expectations and then a letter grade. Can you grade each by beginning of the year expectations? Versus that, okay, so running backs, I'd say C minus.
Yeah, I'd say a C. Yeah.
Wide receivers.
I'm going to give receivers a B plus because of Hurd.
Okay. Yeah. I'll go flat A. And that's probably stretching it a little bit, but I'll go flat A because they were pretty good. And then towards the end of the year, Platt started making some catches and things like that. Tight ends, I'll go D because there was a lot of talk about them. And it's kind of unfair because they're so young, and it was really one guy. It was Henley.
I'm gonna go a C on that one just because they were all so young, freshmen. Henderson got hurt early, so they never really had a shot, to be honest.
O-line.
Based on expectations, probably right around what it was. So yeah, like I'd probably say a B, because, B minus,
Defensive line.
I'm giving defensive line a C, for sure. They did not take the step I thought they were going to take. So, yeah.
Well, they had a goal of like 50 sacks or whatever were nowhere near close to that. And that's not an indictment on Frank Okham either. I still think he's going to be a really good coach. They just didn't perform up to expectations. So I'll go C minus. I don't want to fail anybody, really. Linebackers versus expectations?
Probably say a B. Because once Clay got healthy, we finally saw that they're actually, because of him and, some of the other guys took some steps, but his absence made them look far worse early in the year, I feel like.
I know we did D-line as a group, but a lot of those guys move around. You have James Lynch playing both spots, but secondary, we'll split it up. Corners? I'm going to say an A.
An A, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna say a B on that one. They held down some of the quarterbacks, but other games, it was bad. Like that Oklahoma game was really – West Virginia, really bad. I mean there were some times where I just felt like they didn't get stops when they needed them and missed tackles. And I know that's also safeties, but I'd probably say a B.
I like the way they played towards the end of the year.
Yeah, which for sure.
Raises their grade a little bit. It's like they didn't do anything most of the semester, and at the end they crammed and got a big test score. Safeties versus expectations.
I'm just going to keep it probably where it was at the beginning of the year with a C.
Yeah,
they just stayed level.
Yeah, same here. Can you explain how Rivals are 24/7 ranks teams? Oh, sorry, we negated special teams. So like A plus or something for Drew Galitz and Connor Martin. C minus.
Yeah, C minus.
Too inconsistent.
Yeah, especially with the expectation that he could be a all Big 12 performer.
Yeah, he was a disappointment this year in terms of results because there were some kicks that were very makeable that he whiffed on some extra points. I mean, it was kind of weird with him this season. Yeah. Alpha Needle. Okay, that was the one we just did, huh? Yeah. Or no, it's a second part. Can you explain how Rivals are 24/7 ranks teams? I understand they rank an individual player. Don't understand how they aggregate in a single recruiting score. Example, our 2018 class had 215.02 points on 24/7 recruiting site. How do they come up with 215.02?
So it's basically each player, based on where they're ranked and you know how many stars they have, gets a point total assigned to them. And so that's why when you see, you know, the class, so if Baylor were to add a Demarius Good, they would get however many points he's worth added to their score. And so that's how they get the total score that you're seeing on there. And so it's basically just the worth of the players based on how they're graded by the 247 website, the composite ranking. And so that's how they're able to figure out who has the number one class in the nation by who has the highest score on 247.
All right. I'll go ahead and ask this one, and you can ask the next couple or something, but you've got more thoughts on this particular answer than I have at the moment. Crash, can we beat Arizona on Saturday? I will say yes. Anything's possible. Yeah. And could a win at Arizona turn the tide of the season? He's obviously talking about men's basketball, and I know you got some thoughts on the men's team.
So I think Baylor can beat Arizona. I definitely do. I definitely do, especially since they've had so much time to prepare. I would be very disappointed if they didn't come out and at least compete in this game from the get-go, unlike that Wichita State game where the game got so far away from them early. Yeah, they came back, but that game was pretty much over in the first half. So I'm expecting them to play a whole lot better this week. I think Arizona's a good team. They're not a great team. They lost to Alabama, I believe, on Sunday. Yeah, on Sunday they lost to Alabama. They lost to Auburn by double digits, lost to Gonzaga by double digits, but those are two top 10 teams, and they beat Iowa State, a pretty good Iowa State team. So, you know, Arizona, I mean, they've been battle-tested, and so that's kind of where my issue lies, is that Baylor really hasn't played that many good teams to start this year, and my concern is that Arizona has played some really good teams, and they're going to be a little bit more prepared in this matchup. I think Baylor if they can hit them at a good time and maybe Arizona doesn't come out ready to go, then anything's possible, of course. But if I were a betting man in Arizona, I don't see Baylor coming away with this win. I think Arizona does beat them. But if Baylor did win this game, I would definitely say that would change the tide to a pretty big extreme because they need to make up for that Texas Southern loss. And if you're able to beat Arizona, that definitely gives you an opportunity to say, you know, you've made up for it pretty much in your RPI and things like that. So I do believe that if Baylor wins this game, it changes the tide of their season for the moment, as long as they're able to take care of business on the way into conference season. But I do not see it happening this week. I think Arizona will win this game. But I expect Baylor to make it closer than I think many people would think. I think he'll be within single digits.
You feeling okay about the direction and everything with this team?
Dude, with the Baylor team?
Yeah.
I'm feeling okay that they're going to continue to get better. That's what I would say. But Mekhi Mason not being 100%, the lulls they experience on offense, the lack of intensity on defense at times, those are all things that need to get corrected and need to get corrected fast. And I know other teams have bad losses too, and I get that, but in college basketball, your RPI matters a ton when it comes to getting in the tournament, as we saw last year when Baylor didn't get in. they have to find a way to get wins and make up for that loss. And so we'll see if they're able to do that. I like the fact that, and Ashley's posted a ton of notes on this, that they're a team that's kind of coming together, a team that's gelling, and they get along and things like that. And that's great. And who knows, maybe that propels them to getting a big win like this and propels them down the road. But I just don't know if the talent is quite there this season. And they're going to need Kegler to play like an all Big 12 guy if they're going to have a shot at making the Big 12 tournament. I mean, making the NCAA tournament, in my opinion.
So we do appreciate it, Crash. Thanks for the question, as always. And yeah, Ashley Hodge always has a lot of good notes on the premium side of things over on Sikkim365.com.
So Lil Sebastian, I know we're a week or two from bowls, but which Big 12 bowls do you see as definite losses? Help me win my pick 'em.
Well, there's no definite losses, I feel like, in bowl season, because teams just can get squirrely during that time of year. Like, they're either disappointed they're not in a bigger game, like the excuse made for Alabama when they got beat by Trevor Knight and OU a few years ago. They're disappointed. They're in the freaking Sugar Bowl. How spoiled are you? And OU straight up beat them. I don't buy in any of that. But, you know, that's kind of weird things that can happen during bowl season. But to me, the two that stand out, and I don't know which one I'd put above the other, but West Virginia with no Will Grier, that seems like one that's a pretty good candidate for a Big 12 loss. And the other one's Texas-Georgia. I don't see Texas beating Georgia. There's no way that I see that happening other than just the craziness of bowl season, but I don't think they're anywhere on the level of Georgia in any manner. So I would say Georgia over Texas is a pretty safe bet, and then Syracuse over West Virginia, because without Will Grier, the Mountaineers are going to be able to score enough points to keep up with Baber's offense. I don't know. Those are the two that stand out to me, because the other one's like Mizzou, Oklahoma State. Mizzou's a favorite, but I don't think that they're like crazy better than the Cowboys are by that much of a margin. I think the Baylor result is kind of a 50-50 one at this point. Don't really know. Iowa State, Washington State, what kind of game is that even going to be? Is it going to be offensive or is it going to be defensive? So those are the two that stand out to me. Flip a coin, and if you lose your money, it was Grayson's fault.
Mine is, I'm going with you. Without Will Grier, I would almost say it's a gimme that Syracuse is going to beat them. Unless the ACC is just terrible, which I have a feeling it might
Other
be.
Other than Clemson, it kind of looks that way.
So I that's my only concern, is that Syracuse is just not good at all. Mm-hmm. And that could be. And so we'll see how that goes, but that would be my number one, just because you're missing your best player at quarterback. That's really tough to replace. As far as the other ones, you know, I hate to agree with you, but I do agree with you. I think that it's definitely the Texas game, but the reason I hate to agree with you is because Tom Herman is so good in games right, where he's the underdog. And so it makes me think that they're going to come in a lot more hungry than Georgia is, after Georgia just missing out on making the playoff. And, you know, I remember when Baylor played Michigan State, mm-hmm. came out ready to go, but then towards the end, one team just wanted it more, mm-hmm. period. And I'm kind of worried that Georgia might be susceptible to that in this football game.
Well, Georgia's playing a school that's a bigger blue blood than they are. They're about on par with one another, mm-hmm. but Texas is slightly a bigger blue blood, I would say. And Georgia has a nice long history, but really they're kind of new back on the block once again. I think on paper, Georgia is clearly a better team.
For sure.
I think they're as well, if not better, coached. They're better recruiting. There's really not a box that you check for Texas, in my opinion. Even like the quarterback that normally Texas has the favorite, except for against West Virginia and OU, that's not even the case in this game. So, yeah, a letdown. And that's what I was getting at with like just squirrely mm-hmm. bowl season, is some teams just don't care to be there. But if Georgia can't get primed up for Texas, then in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, then they need to check their pulse, because it's not like they've been hanging national title banners here recently.
Yeah, no, but it's the same thing, because that's a game I can see a hangover. I can see the Washington State not getting in a New Year's Six Bowl, causing mm-hmm. them to hang over a little bit against Iowa State, who, as we know, Iowa State handles the air raid spread offenses just about as well as anybody.
Right.
So that's another one where I just don't know.
You give Leach a month to prepare.
Yeah. And you just go, Washington State is a much better football team. They have been all year, but I don't feel confident in picking that one. And then the one that I will say, I think Cal should beat TCU. I really do. But the problem is Cal has no offense either. And so it's like, who's going to score 20 first? That's right. Who's going to win that game. And so, yeah, I can only give you those two. I would also feel pretty confident in picking Alabama to win, even though I do think Oklahoma is going to I have a weird feeling that Oklahoma could do what they did to Georgia last year and maybe close it out, but I also have a feeling that Oklahoma's not going to be able to stop them at all. Mm-hmm. And so there's some concerns there. They'd be probably third on my list as most likely would be Bama, just because it's Bama.
Yeah, that's fair, and that's who most people will bet on, so you're probably not going wrong there, but it's been a kind of a magical run for OU here lately. Revenge on Texas, Heisman Trophy. And I think I do think Alabama's going to have an extra chip on their shoulder with Tua getting snubbed. I think that's really got them ultra-focused on OU. So that's a good possibility as well. There are not really many games they're going to be favored in the Big 12 Conference, quite frankly. Let's see. Are you still on the list, Sebastian?
Is it possible for Les Miles to be a strong recruiter at Kansas?
Sure. And he just hired, what was it, Emmett Jones?
Yeah, Emmett Jones from Tech, wide receiver.
I mean, as strong as you can be at Kansas.
Yeah, I think he's going to do we saw Beatty was starting to get a couple recruits here or there. Puka Williams is one of them.
A couple four-stars in each class. Yeah. Probably three or four because of Miles and Jones combo.
And we know Les Miles will push the envelope a little bit, and he'll make sure that he gets enough talent where they're competing. But it's still Kansas, so we'll see if he's able to recruit. So he's not going to recruit to the level that LSU recruited at. No. That's what the question is. No. But I think he could get him to middle of the pack, maybe sixth or seventh in the Big 12 in recruiting.
That's where I would go. I would not go really any higher than that because they're not going to recruit better than OU or Texas or probably Baylor at this point. And then you got all the other new head coaches in the league as well with Matt Wells should have an easier time recruiting than Les Miles.
Oklahoma State, he won't catch Oklahoma State.
Probably
not.
So yeah, about middle to back of the pack. I don't think it'll be anything just crazy. We'll see that initial rush of a new coach and the name and everything like that, eating grass and all that stuff.
And then last question is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
No.
Takes
it's
place
gonna
at
controversial,
Christmas.
I know, but no, yeah. I don't consider it a Christmas movie.
I think that if you consider that a Christmas movie, then that means basically any movie that has any bit of Christmas in it is a Christmas movie. So therefore, Harry Potter is a Christmas movie.
The Michael Keaton Batman is a
Christmas
movie.
Yeah.
So exactly. I don't go that way myself as far as it's Christmas time, so it's a Christmas movie. Yeah.
But
I understand
I do love
the passion for Die Hard.
I do love me a good Die Hard
movie, course.
Though.
Of course. Here we go, Nate. Hey, guys, word on the interview, Temple went for Coach Brown. Yep, he did not get the job. It's going to Manny Diaz. I'm interested to hear if either of you have heard anything. Yep, he didn't get the job. let's see. Well, I know everyone's replaceable. I hate to see him leave. I think he's the most important coach Baylor has. Obviously, besides Coach Rules, he seems to be the guy who resonates most with the majority of recruits. As guys get to see behind the scenes more than I can even imagine, from your perspectives, what is it about Coach Brown you've either witnessed or heard about that makes him so valuable to the staff, respected by recruits, and a candidate for a head coaching spot with very little coaching experience on his resume? As always, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And we appreciate you as always, Nate.
So first of all, as far as him getting the opportunity to go interview for this job, it was the job is why he got interviewed. It was Temple, where he just came from. That was the main reason why he got interviewed. It's not like a USC was interviewing to be the head coach. It wasn't anything like that, but I think that was a big part of it. I think he's gonna, as he grows, he's gonna develop into a guy that, you know, other schools will start looking at. But I think this particular instance was because it was Temple, that it made a whole lot of sense. Now, as far as what I've heard on him, he is absolutely the guy on the recruiting trail that every single player in this recruiting class knows. Every single one. They know him, they've met him, they've talked to him, and that's why he is so beloved by these recruits, because he's a guy that goes out and makes that effort all over the place. Evan Cooper is another one that is close, but not quite. He's you don't hear his name as often, is what I would say. But Fran is absolutely one that, I've heard a parent say, you know, oh, we're close to landing this guy. All right, we need to call in Fran. Like, you know, so it's something like that. Like, he'll, a parent will just be like, oh, they may be able to get this kid. Like, Fran needs to seal the deal or whatever. And so that's what it is. Like, Fran is the guy that is their closer. He's their closer. He's the guy that they get along with really well, build a relationship with, and then go, I trust this guy. And I trust that he's going to make me into the best player I can be. And that's why Fran is so loved by this every single recruit that has come to Baylor during Coach Rule's time.
Yeah, and I think it's just how authentic he is. He's got an authenticity that's, you know, said about other assistant coaches, and I'm sure there's a lot of other real assistant coaches and genuine assistant coaches, but I don't know how many people will get this reference, but he's also not a guy on the recruiting trips. He's all up in the pictures. He's all on the videos. He's all in your face on camera, like certain other coaches of his type in the Big 12 that you see a lot of. You see a lot of talking from all the time, a lot of shh from all the time is one that comes to mind. He's behind the scenes and just does his thing, and that's what to me makes it even more genuine. Is it's not, there's nothing flashy about it. There's not a bunch of Twitter, you know, stuff going on with him. He's not, you know, all over the place on social media. He just does his thing, and he when he speaks to recruits, he apparently hits them right in the heart, and especially those who have similar backgrounds to him. He grew up in the roughest city in America, depending on what year you're looking at the rankings, and what Camden, New Jersey. So he knows even better than some of the guys who've grown up in really bad situations what really bad growing up is like. And so I think that he's just so relatable and so authentic and so genuine, and he doesn't go all in your face in doing it. So that's why he's so so in tune with these recruits. He doesn't BS people. So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned authenticity. I'm glad you did, because parents, like I said, that's a big reason why he relates so well with parents, and why parents feel comfortable saying, wow, like, I want my kid to go, you know, be coached by Fran Brown. They say the same thing about Rule. They say the same thing really about everyone on the staff. They're just authentic and real with the recruits.
And they build trust and build relationships.
And they don't break it. Uh-huh. And that's kind of... that's something you don't see a lot in recruiting, and it can play in your favor, especially for a school like Baylor.
Right. So that, I think, answers your question, Nate, and we do appreciate your question as well as everyone else's. That'll do it for us this week on the Fast Friday podcast. Nice, lengthy episode for you. Feels, man, this time of year is just so strange. I don't know if part of it just gets dark early outside or what, but it feels like we haven't done a podcast in a few weeks. We did it last week. But we'll be back next week, and it will be a big addition, as we will be talking all of those players who signed next Wednesday on the first National Signing Day. We'll talk those who didn't and what that means. We'll talk, obviously, maybe some new commits this weekend with the last round of official visits before early signing day. And we'll have the bowl game to talk about as well. So we'll have more than enough content, and who knows, like the Jalen Hurd going to the Senior Bowl. Who knows what kind of notes we may have by then as well. But we do appreciate you listening. Grayson, have a great week.
You too, and I hope you like P.F. Chang's.
Yes, I do. I'm going to go enjoy that, and then I'll go over on a Sikkim 365, see what the latest on the premium side of things is with recruiting, and the latest updates from Grayson and Colt and everyone else. So do appreciate you listening, as always. It's been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.